Thank you, Hillary. I'd like to thank Hillary and Debbie Katz for organizing this series of lectures and giving me this opportunity to share some thoughts with you this evening about a topic dear to all of our hearts, and that is Chinuch Habanim. And thanks to all of you for coming this evening. I'd like to begin with a few introductory thoughts about the importance of the topic we're addressing tonight. The Sfarno at the beginning of Parshas Pekudei points out an incongruity between the Mishkan, the portable tabernacle that the Jews used for 40 years in the desert and 369 years in Eretz Yisrael, which was moved around numerous times, and both Batei Mikdash. Both Batei Mikdash and when the Haftarah a week ago talks about this, required a fund known as Bedek HaBayis for repairs. Nevertheless, the Mishkan, which was portable and kept getting moved around and taken apart, the Gemara tells us, required absolutely no repair. The Gemara in Yuma refers to a pasuk of Atzei Shitim Omedim, that the wood of the Mishkan still remains standing wherever it is hidden. So why was it that the Mishkan, which seemingly would require the repairs, required none, whereas the both Batei Mikdash required numerous repairs? So he answers that the Mishkan was built completely and totally by great tzaddikim, Bezalel, Aholiyav, of course Moshe Rabbeinu, and it had a special nature in its foundation that was so perfect that did not allow for any mistakes or anything going wrong or anything being broken. Whereas the first Beis HaMikdash, we learn in Navi, was contributed to by worksmen, craftsmen from the country of Tsor, Tyre. So we had people who were involved in it who were not such great tzaddikim. And therefore, the Beis HaMikdash was subject to what happens to normal buildings. And the Mishkan had a special nature because of its wonderful foundation. There's a pasuk in Koheles which tells us Tov acharis davar mereishiso, which normally is translated as the end of something is better than the beginning. Some translate it is in the following fashion. The end of something is good depending on how you start. So it is crucial in anything that we do, and certainly in a Meleches HaKodesh, such as Chinuch Habanim, that we have a solid foundation. And therefore, addressing this topic this evening and really all of our lives is so crucial. One thought. Another thought, which also contributes to this, if you take a look in Parshas Truma and Parshas Behalosecha, you find that there were three things that were made that the Torah requires that they are miksha, hewn out of one piece of either gold, which applied to the menorah, and the keruvim, the cherubs, or silver, which applied to the chatzotzeros, the trumpets that were used to direct the nation when they were supposed to move and not stop in the desert. These were the three things that had to be made in miksha fashion. Why? So miksha, making something out of one piece, is the most difficult way to do it. It's easier to take little pieces and put them all together. However, the most lasting effects, making sure something remains in its best shape, is done by making it miksha, giving it greater permanence. Now the menorah represents Talmud Torah, study of Torah. The kruvim, the cherubs, represent chinuch habonim, educating our children. And the chatzotzeros represent leadership. The Torah is teaching us that all three require people to act and create and make decisions in the most difficult fashion, doing what is hard to do in order to make sure that it is lasting. Therefore, in our solid foundation for educating our children, we really have to be prepared to do what is difficult, to do the tough stuff to achieve our goals. And Chinuch Habanim, educating our children, and Talmud Torah, study of Torah, are inextricably intertwined. A third brief thought. In the Haggadah, at the point of the Haggadah where everybody gets lost, when they start breaking up all the psukim, everybody was wondering what's going on over there, there's a quote, the Es Amoleinu, and our burden, Elu Habonim, these are the children. And then the Haggadah quotes a pasuk that refers to the first, the male babies being thrown into the Nile River. So that Es Amoleinu, our burden in the Mitzrayim, was the throwing of the boys into the river. Some interpret this in the following way. Es Amoleinu, our main concern in life, is our children. And I venture to say that for all of us, our children's needs, their education, are the most important issues for us in our lives. And with that, understanding that we need to give them a solid foundation and we need to make difficult decisions, we can go on to a few universal principles that apply to all aspects of chinuch for our children to make it successful. Number one, not that there aren't others, these are four that are foremost in my mind really at all times. Number one, there has to be consistency between parents. I have to tell you, I recall my own children complaining that they couldn't break down either one of us. And many, many plans or models or ways of dealing with our children may be successful within certain bounds. But most parents, both parents have to be on the same page. Kids must know that both parents are involved with them and then they're in cahoots. Not being in agreement is a fatal flaw. Where parents have differing views, approaches, they must find a way to come to a common ground, perhaps a compromise that is necessary from the start. If a parent handles a certain situation and the other parent tells the child, I disagreed, it is lethal. You will not be successful in raising children successfully that way. That's number one. Number two, we as parents must model what we teach and preach. We set standards for our children not by telling them what to do, but the way we act. They quickly pick up on our inconsistencies and sometimes things that could be called hypocrisies. A few examples that I think are quite prominent. The language that we use. If we don't want our children to use certain type of language, they can't hear it from us. I recall vividly, this goes back probably about 25 years, a fellow, I sat next to him in shul, and he came to shul twice a day, and he was koveya itim for Talmud Torah. His child, who was about 3 or 4 years old, did something that was not such a big deal. He let out a stream of obscenities that embarrassed everybody around us. Now, and embarrass the child. I just know this child, 25 years later, still has many issues. So if we don't want them to hear to use that type of language, we can't use it ourselves. Number two, we must speak with proper derech eretz to our spouse and our children. Are we sarcastic? Do we put people down? Are we hypercritical? Which, by the way, how to give constructive criticism is a topic of its own. Some food for thought along these lines, concerning the way we act, the way we talk. Are the programs, the internet, movies, DVDs, even the words of music that we allow our children to listen to or watch, are they following in the same modes of behavior that we espouse? When we invite these guests into our living room, we are telling our children that just watch them, listen to them, and follow them. Do we want that? Because if we don't, then we are giving mixed messages to our children. And the children will pick up on that, and they will choose to do what they feel is best, and probably what is most popular. Another point, we want our children to respect us. Do we respect our own parents? How do we talk about our own parents? Do we show them the proper kibud of aim that we expect from our children? If we don't, it's not going to work. And then the classical case of truthfulness. We lecture about being honest, and when someone calls for us and we tell our children, tell them I'm not home, we know what that teaches the children. We expect our children to sit down and learn. Do we learn? Do we open up a safer? We expect our children not to speak Lashon Hara, not to say bad things about people. What are they seeing in us? We expect our children to daven in shul. Are they seeing us davening in shul? Are we going out for the kiddush after the haftarah, during the haftarah? Are we talking in shul and then telling our children to stop talking? And to the topic of this evening, are we responsible and accountable? Do we do what we say we're going to do, or are we always making excuses for things? If our mode of behavior is excuses, then our children's modes of behavior will be excuses and not taking responsibility for themselves. A third area, Simchas HaChayim, joy for life, and Simcha Ba'asiyas Mitzvos, joy in doing mitzvos. We want the children to be happy. Are we? Are we positive? Are we optimistic? Are we upbeat? Or are we cynical? Do we exhibit, in times of crisis, the faith and trust that we tell our children they should have? There's a story, whether it's true or not doesn't matter, about a Hasidic Rebbe who was quite rich. He had a fleet of ships, and the whole fleet sank. So Hasidim wanted to break the news to the Rebbe gently. And they went over to him, Rebbe, someone in our community just lost a vast fortune. So the Rebbe said, we have to tell him, he has to be strong in his faith in God and trust, and etc. And slowly and gradually told him it was his fleet of ships, and he fainted. Emunah is in the abstract, bitachon is in real life. Regarding mitzvos, do we play the song, the Pesach Blues, every year? And there is such a song. Or do we recognize that before we do a mitzvah, we say the words, Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvosav, thanking God not for giving us the pain in the neck of doing the mitzvah, but rather the privilege of being sanctified in doing the mitzvah? Is that our attitude? Do we show that? Rav Ruderman, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, said that his father had no building talents. Nevertheless, every year he would go build the sukkah himself and not have anyone do it. And he'd try and build it and it would fall down. And he'd try and build it and it would fall down. And finally he got it to stay together. But he said he learned from that the importance of involvement in the mitzvah, the importance of enthusiasm for a mitzvah, the importance of love for a mitzvah. And he never forgot it. So are we exhibiting that joy for life that we want our kids to show? Are we exhibiting an enthusiasm for mitzvos that we want to see from our children? And have we learned and have we taught our children the laws of Kibbutz Av V'Em? Because the Torah's model for proper chinuch habonim are the halachos of Kibbutz Av V'Em. You want a model? You want a structure? There it is. And just two good books that are out. There's a book called The Fifth Commandment, which goes through the halachos. There's a real new book by Yehuda Samet called My Father, My Mother, and Me, which follows the halachos and gives, as Yehuda Samet does in their other books, many, many stories and examples. Just a few examples of things that in our culture, in general, are either looked down upon or ignored, but which are very, very prominent in Hilchos Kibbutz Av V'Em. And would set up the proper structure for knowing that children and parents are not equals. Sitting in parents' seats. Simple thing, but it sets up a boundary. Calling parents by first names. We are not even allowed to refer to our parents by their first name, so that I've called offices and houses and had children answer the phone and say, can I speak with your mother? And they say, the answer, do you want to speak with Sam or June or whatever it is? Not allowed to do it. In fact, if you're referring to your parent, you have to use a title for them, Mr., Mrs., Rabbi, Doctor, whatever it is. And this is a real killer. You can't contradict your parents. Clear halacha. And another halacha that many people are mochel, they forgo, but which also sets up the type of structure which is appropriate for Kibbutz Av V'Em, standing up for parents. Now, tonight is not the venue for an in-depth presentation about Hilchos Kibbutz Av V'Em, but our structure in our houses must be based upon these halachos. And you can go straight to the Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya, you can go to the Kitar Shulchan Aruch, you can go to the Chai Adam, go to the Chochmas Adam probably, and the Chochmas Adam. And we have these books today that enable us to learn these halachos thoroughly. Okay, those are thoughts actually which are prominent in my mind, and I start off by sharing them with you. My central point this evening is the concept of midah keneged midah, which when you ask people to translate, they'll tell you it means measure for measure, whatever that means. Or in Latin, it's quid pro quo, for those of you who know Latin. But to achieve the goal of instilling accountability and responsibility in our children, we must hold them accountable and responsible. How do we do this? So, aside from Hichlus Kibud Av V'Em, we go to the Torah's model of Midah Keneged Midah. But I must spend some time dispelling the myth of what it means. Most people, I believe, think that this is a way of punishment. We're coming to Pesach now, so among the most prominent of Divrei Torah, if anybody's awake at that point, when you get to the Makos, we talk about how each Makah is an appropriate punishment for the Egyptians because of what they did to us. So, again, punishment. In Parshas Yisro, we find Rashi points out, is enamored by the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu punished the Egyptians, Kiva Dovor Shezadu Aleihem, and the way they treated us, that's the way they got punished. And now, Purim's next week. Well, in a week it's over. But Haman, bunch of Midah Keneged Midah examples there. He made a tree, he measured himself on the tree because he was the same height as Mordechai, and he got hung on the tree. And it goes on and on from there. So actually, the concept of Midah Keneged Midah is not one of punishment. Because we have numerous examples of Midah Keneged Midah being in positive, in reward. One with which you may be familiar is that it says, Kol hadon es chaveru l'chaf zechus, hamokam yidineu l'chaf zechus. Anybody who judges others favorably, God will judge them favorably. So we have the concept of midah keneged midah in reward and in positive ways. But actually, this concept or mode of behavior is not really a method, it's not designed to be a method of sachar va'onesh, reward and punishment. It is actually a way of letting us know that God is watching us, and it is really God's method of teaching us how to act and how not to act. So midah keneged midah is God's methodology of getting the message across to us about what we should do and what we shouldn't do. And the Gemara in Shabbos tells us, Mahu Rachum, Hafato Rachum, that we are supposed to emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the ways that we know He acts and apply it to our modes of behavior. So therefore, the modus operandi that God has given us in dealing with situations where we are supposed to be the teachers is midah keneged midah. Now, what does this mean? And how do we apply it? So, first of all, we have to recognize that we were given a responsibility and a privilege to raise our children al pi derech haTorah. Our job is to educate, not to punish or reward. They are just means to the end. As an example, in Rav Shlomo Volbe's book, Zariah Uvinyan Bechinuch, he has a little story, a little vignette, about someone who was applying for a position as a mashgiach in the yeshiva. Now, a mashgiach's job is very varied. It's normally, sometimes it's teaching, sometimes it's giving lectures, but it's always involved with the students, watching them, making sure they're in line, and keeping them in line. So this person who was applying for a position as a mashkiach in the yeshiva met with Rav Volbi. And his first question was, do I have the authority to expel a student? Rav Volbi said, he's not going to make it. His first question is, how do I get the students to be excited? How do I motivate them? How do I keep them in the yeshiva? And he says the same thing about parents. If our first knee-jerk reaction is how do we punish, then we're missing the boat. We must begin with idud, with encouragement, and that has to be the basis of all we do. Therefore, if we punish just to get back at a child for being a pain in the neck, that is known as nekama. That is known as revenge, for which we have prohibitions in the Torah. In fact, this goes a little far, Rav Simcha Wasserman Zatzal said the following. If mother is preparing for Shabbos and she wants the children out of the kitchen because she wants to be able to prepare without disturbance, and she tells them that, he said that's anti-educational. If you do it to teach the children that they have to be helpful for Shabbos, then it's okay. But therefore, since our purpose or our goal or our responsibility is to educate our children, not to punish or to reward, you have to remember we cannot punish when we are angry. Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitt says the following, Mitzius shel kas, the actual nature of anger, so refes es chachmaso shel koes. It burns to a crisp the wisdom of the person who was angry. Therefore, we find many stories of people waiting. One gadol had a special jacket he put on before he disciplined his children. By the time he got that on, he was calm. The Igeres HaRamban, the letter that the Ramban wrote to his son when he had to run from Spain to Eretz Yisrael, talks about anger and controlling it. Share a story with you about my father, Zatzal. When my sister and I were sitting shiva for my father, we shared stories, things that I knew and things that she knew. So she told me the story. I had never heard this. My father never, ever lost it. Never. No matter what I did, he didn't lose it. And he told my sister that he had a brother with whom he was very close. Actually, when they were kids, they were the best of friends and best of enemies. He was about 2 years older than his brother. And my father always told me that in shul, my grandfather sat between them, because if they were good friends, he didn't want them together, and if they were good enemies, he didn't want them together. But whatever it is, they couldn't sit together in shul because of that. But my father told my sister that there was one time that he really, really lost it. And shortly after that, now my father grew up in Newark, New Jersey. And this was in the 20s. No yeshiva there. My grandparents hired malamdim for their children. A few weeks later, my father had a new teacher just to teach him Igeres HaRamban. He didn't relate it to this story until years later, he said. But he told my sister that his ability to be in control and not to lose it and not to get angry came from his learning Igeres HaRamban. Now, it is, by the way, translated to many versions in English. Art School has a version, A Letter for the Ages, and it's something to study and to spend time with. Because we may not punish when we're angry, because it's probably for the wrong reasons, then it's appropriate to wait. Not all actions have to be taken immediately. I have a number of stories, but one story in particular, which happened about 20 years ago, I had a young man in sixth grade who did something that really upset me. And I told him on the day that it happened that I would think about the proper punishment once I was no longer upset. That night I got a call from his mother, a very irate call from his mother. And she told me, "You're making my child miserable." I said, "Well, I didn't say it. I want to tell her, well, that's an extra bonus, but I didn't." I didn't say that to her. But she said, because he knows you're going to come up with something good, and he doesn't know what, and he's real nervous about it. I said, I'll make a deal with you. I'll tell you what. I'm still upset about this, because this was really what he did. I don't remember what he did. I just know it was really off the books. I said, I'll make a deal with you. If it'll make you happy, tomorrow, when I'm still upset, I will give him a consequence that is inappropriate, qualitatively and quantitatively. He will learn nothing from it, and he will be resentful. But if that's what you want, I'll do it, or else I'll wait a day or two and I'll give him the consequence that from which he'll learn. So she changed her tune. But we have to remember that knee-jerk reactions are normally inappropriate. One other thing, we have a pasuk in Tehillim, Imo Anochi Vitzara. Hashem says He is with us in our pain. When we do have to give a negative consequence to children, we should feel bad. It should hurt us. They tell a story about there's a Rev Shlomo Karbach in Germany, not the one with whom we're so familiar, a relative of his, who, because he was Yekish, he had this thing that if his kids came to shul on time, they got jelly on their bread, which was a delicacy. I don't get that, I hate jelly. But chocolate spread would have been worth it. So if the children didn't come to shul on time, they didn't have their jelly. But Rav Karbach, when his children didn't have jelly, he didn't either, because he felt their pain. Therefore, when we must start off by thinking of discipline and reward as using natural consequences that will teach the child. And I must emphasize again that we're not talking about negativity, and we really have to start with positive, and it has to be motivational systems or atmosphere. Therefore, sort of to summarize and to add, in dealing with our children, we have to start off with a plan before. I believe that we often get angry at things because we're angry at ourselves because we don't know what to do. The frustration, not knowing what to do, is really, really annoying to us. So we take it out on our kids. So planning is necessary. Number two, again, as I said before, never punish when you're angry. And a quote from Rav Chaim Mivolozhin regarding that, Adam ka'ason einu yachol lahochiach. A person who gets angry cannot criticize or correct properly. We must consider carefully the nature of what was done and the underlying cause. Now, this is both for reward and negative consequences. If we give our child a Lexus every time they do something good, this, what do you give after that? You know? I mean, I don't know how you, what do you do? How do you feed them? That's a separate problem. But if we give them rewards that are not qualitatively and quantitatively appropriate, it just, there's no end to it. And all they will want is more and more and more, and not understand it's not a lesson. We're not teaching them. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said, when a child has to be disciplined for doing something wrong, whether you should ring out the big guns for it or not, ask yourself the question, will they do the same when they're walking down to the chuppah? If they will, you should start worrying. Another thing that must be done in the process, both for positive and negative, we must explain to the child what the midah keneged midah is. We want them to learn from it. We want them to understand that we're teaching them what's right and what's wrong. It's not going to happen without our explaining it to them. And when telling children they did something wrong, we must be careful not to destroy him or her. The classical Yiddish phrase is pas nish fadir. This doesn't live up to your standards is the way we should be speaking to them. I like to tell children when something happens, I'm disappointed, not in you, but what happened. And then I ask them if they know what disappointed means. And they said, yeah, it means you're angry. I said, no. Disappointed means I thought I was going to get ice cream and I got broccoli. Meaning, I expected a certain mode of behavior from you that you have taught me to expect, and you didn't live up to those standards. And also, this is not part of our discussion, don't use cliches such as, if you talk that way to me, your children will talk that way to you. Because the response is, you mean you spoke that way to your father? So stay away from cliches. They always backfire. Going on, don't try to be your child's best friend. That's not your job. And don't be afraid of your child. We have to remember that children do want guidelines. They feel lost without them. And if we don't give it to them, who will? One thing that I do often, I don't know how it works at home, is I have a number of writing assignments that have to do with the action that was taken. And they have to read about it and describe it and see what they learned from it. I have a young lady who is now about 28 years old, has three children, and she thinks that she did every single writing assignment that I have. She didn't. And I want to emphasize again, although a lot of what I've been saying has to do with negative consequences, we have to remember that the same rules apply for positives. And actually, the atmosphere in our homes has to be that of motivation and positivity. Now, this does require thought on our parts. reevaluation perhaps, and really thinking through how we should be dealing with our children. One final area, and just a few words about that, is allowing teaching them to deal with issues on their own. We are here to guide and help our children. We are not here to live for them. We must be the guides to enable them to be independent and make decisions and deal with problems on their own. If we are going to interfere with everything that happens with them and try to solve their problems for them, they will never learn to deal with life's issues. They will be crippled as adults when problems come up and we can't be there for them. Our job is to assist them and help them in dealing with these problems. We must allow and encourage them to take risks, even to fail. There's a pasuk in Mishle that says, Ki sheva yipol tzadik vakam. A tzadik will fall 7 times and rise, come up again. Rav Yitzchak Kuttner Zatzal said, this doesn't just mean that in spite of falling, that someone will be able to rise and be successful. He says that because of the failures and what we learn from the failures, we can be successful. So if we try to cushion our children from difficult situations, to prevent them from ever making mistakes, we are actually, as I said before, crippling them for life. I think it was Thomas Edison who said, and we know he had many, many failed experiments, I didn't fail hundreds of times. I just learned hundreds of ways not to do things. So, in summary, we have discussed the significance of our being together tonight, 4 universal principles, the idea and the application of Midah Keneged Midah as educating our children and encouraging independence. Hopefully you have found these ideas to be helpful and will be able to improve any areas in which you feel need improvement. But there's one vital ingredient that I've really left out so far, and that is tefillah, prayer. Ultimately, we must turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to make us successful in anything. They said that when Ryakov Kamenetsky came to this country, he was here, he was in Canada, and he saw the situation here religiously, that he prayed that his children would end up being Shomrei Shabbos and Shomrei Kashrus. Well, he got a little bit more than that. But it is our tefillos and our prayers that are so vital. One particular gadol, I don't remember who it was asked, how come he was so successful with his children? So he answered, if you knew how many tears I shed, you wouldn't be asking this question. There are special tefillos written at time of Hadlokas Neros, before Shabbos, the many women say. There are books out now with all sorts of tefillos. We could look at those books, but we really don't need them. Our own tefillos, our own heartfelt tefillos, are the ones that are really, really meaningful. It doesn't have to be long paragraphs. We can add them in our davening in Shema Koleinu. We could add them in Shmon Esrei and Elokai Netzor. Or we could say them at any time. But let us not think that our success with children will come without turning to Ribono Shel Olam, as is true that our success in no area can be successful without turning to Ribono Shel Olam. Thank you.